Was ist doch übers Rhein?
So the Chofetz Chaim discusses, yeah, today's limud is Lizchus Refuas HaNefesh, Refuas HaGuf of our friend Dudi, Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, Zalman Arfuas Shlem, V'Shalich Shal Chayla Yisrael. The Chofetz Chaim cited recently, last week, we spoke about an example of somebody who approaches somebody for tzedakah, and he doesn't give him, and afterwards he wants to go to the Rav and speak to him. So he speaks Bichlal, says the Chofetz Chaim. Let's take the example and examine the example itself. And he says the example itself is what? He said, for instance, he said, there's a pasuk that says, Im kesef talve esami, if you will lend money to my people, then you must treat them nicely, you mustn't chase them, you mustn't be nasty to the person that you lent, etc. So he says, you've got a friend who's in need of a loan, and he approaches somebody who is a wealthy person, right, who you know for a fact, because you're his accountant and you work for him, yeah, you know for a fact that he can afford to lend money. Yeah, and your friend goes to him and he turns him down and he sends him away with nothing. And he says, I'm sorry, he makes some excuse, he hasn't got enough funds, he hasn't got enough money, or there's nothing available at the moment. For whatever reason, he turns down the borrower. And you assume that the real reason why he said no is nothing to do with the fact that he can't afford it. You assume either he doesn't like the face, he didn't like the guy personally, or I don't know, he doesn't lend to Sfardim or whatever. I don't know what it is. Yeah, he's got some prejudice against some group. Doesn't lend to doctors or doesn't lend to surveyors or whatever it is. Yeah, and therefore he's turned him down for some personal reason and not because he can't afford it. Yeah. So, says the Chofetz Chaim, first of all, yeah, so you decide that he said it for the wrong reasons. Says the Chofetz Chaim, first of all, you binoiva betzedek tishpoit amisecho. Right? You have to try and think of some possible reason why he could have had a valid reason. And he said that it's possible that there are things that he knows that you don't know, and therefore you can't assume that the reason why he said it was because he was prejudiced or he was selfish. If you now go and tell anybody else, as Pliny didn't give a loan to an Oni who needed it, yeah, then that's not just Lashon Hara, because you didn't see it yourself. If you were there with the friend and you accompanied him and you were in the room together with the Gevir when the Gevir said no, then you could be speaking Lashon Hara first hand, and even that would be Lashon Hara. But to speak Lashon Hara second hand is even worse. I heard from Yenem that the Gevir refused him, and now I'm telling other people. Yeah, was Yenot gezukt, was that what happened, right? I don't know what went on. I wasn't there. I don't know what the discussion was. So therefore, again, I'm being over Lashon Hara, right? Even the loiver himself, the person who came to borrow the money, he's also not allowed to tell other people. Because as I said, he's mechuyu to be betzedek tishpat amisecho. It's not clear that the person did something wrong. Yeah. Then he says, and what happens if the prospective borrower decides that he wants to teach this Gevir a lesson, yeah, then there's a possibility that he's over of Loisikoim and Loisitar as well. So besides Lashon Hara when he tells other people, if he wants to get even, if he wants to repay this person because he didn't lend him and therefore he's going to be Mavayishim, then again, he's adding to all the other things. Good morning, Mazel Tov. Sachnachas. Yeah, so even the loiver himself, right, can be over. He can be over, right? So we can be over in such a situation. Betzedek tishpat amisecho, loshon hara, loisikoim, and loisitor. Says the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim says, even if this person becomes is known as a gevir and he regularly refuses to lend money, he says it could be that he doesn't think that it's a mitzvah, or he doesn't think that it's a chiyuv. Right? So Pasuk says, Im kesef talve esami, if you will lend. There are other psukim that say that you have to lend. So therefore, he doesn't take it seriously. So it could be that he doesn't have that knowledge or that feeling towards the mitzvah of lending money, and therefore, to speak about him in town and to tell others about it would be certainly over b'tzedek tishpat amisecho and the issa of Lashon Hara.
Start your day at the Turraway, Northwest London, Monday, 14th of Kislev, 27th of November, Rabbi Yitzchok Shurin Shlita, Torah Sovis, and Torah Shimba Eva. How do they differ? This week's Torah is sponsored by family David Levy, Lichwitz, and some sermon of Shimon Levy, and Penny Feingold. Pastor took place yesterday, he brought so in Shimon Levy, and obviously, when the shame is still up, this course, I should worry about the Olim, Bamil Chomor, Shiach, Peru, Levotehem, Vishalom, Bim Heiro.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to speak today about the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'Ever. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was the only one, Zichrono Livracha, was the only one who attempted it. Most people are suffice to say that, you know, there was a Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'Ever, right? But they don't really talk about, number one, what was taught in the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'Ever. Excuse me? Right, it's also true. Or the Tzfas, Kabbalistic, you know, you don't know what they taught over there, right? That's number one. Because he basically said that the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, talks about Avraham Avinu spreading his Torah, and he gives it over to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak gave it over to Yaakov, and Yaakov sat and he taught, right? So, what was it? Was that the same Torah of Shem Ve'Ever? Was it a different Torah of Shem Ve'Ever? Right? That's number one. Number two, were the two Batei Medrash or one? You know, in the literature world, actually it's more in the Chassidish world, but the literature world, you know, you have the father, and then he gets a little bit older, he retires, and he gives it over to the son. In Litta, they actually gave it over to the sons-in-law. Because a son, you can't pick. But a son-in-law, you can't pick. Today, you can't even pick a son-in-law. But in those days, you're able to pick a son-in-law. Right? By the Chassidim, it was more the Rebbe's son took over, right? So Shem was the great-grandfather, and Eva was the great-grandson. So maybe it was the same yeshiva, but they gave it over. Rabbi Yaakov said it was two yeshivas. Right? And I'll also talk about, he didn't say what the makar is, but I think I know what the makar was, that it's actually two yeshivas. So that's number one. The question is, like, what was the Torah that they taught over there? Number two, you know, was it, you know, one or two yeshivas? And then it says in last week's parsha, Vayetze Yaakov, so it says, Vayishkaba Makomahu, he slept in that place. So Rashi comments, and he says, in that place he slept, right? But for 14 years when he was in Shem Ve'Ever, right? He says, actually not Shem Ve'Ever, he says Ever, right? He didn't sleep because Shem was already not alive at the time. Right, so when he slept by, he didn't sleep by Aver, he was sitting and learning Torah, right? So Rabbi Yaakov asked the following question. He said, okay, he says, first of all, like, you know, he was already in the 60s, Yaakov, at that time. So, like, he had a lot of his grandfather's Torah till age 15, then his father's Torah. So, like, why do you have to spend 14 years? And it says in Chazal, in the Sechta, I think, Megillah, it says that for the 22 years he was punished for being gone for so long, but the 14 years in Shem Ve'Ever he was not punished for being. Like, what did he have to be in the Shem Ve'Ever for 14 years? He walked out of a house of Yitzchak Avinu. Like, he was quite prepared to deal with Lavan. That's what Rabbi Yaakov was asking. And it's interesting that we find in Rashi, as opposed to Chazal, Rashi, of course, is quoting Chazal, but Rashi picks and chooses his Chazal, that Shem Ve'Ever basically begin at the beginning of Parshas Toldos in Rashi, and then again in Parshas Vayetze, and then Vayeshev. In Parshas Toldos, it's V'Yakov Yoshev Ohalim, Olei Shem Ve'Ever, which, by the way, I think that's the makar for Rabbi Yaakov saying it's two yeshivas, because it says Olei Shem Ve'Ever. It shouldn't have to say that, right? Olim sounds like two Olim. There's one of shame, there's one of Eivor. Else it would say Yoshev Ohel, right? Olim is already two. So Rabbi Yaakov probably saw over here that there was two yeshivas, right? And of course Rabbi Yaakov raised the question, is what's the difference between these two yeshivas? If they're not, one is not inheriting to the other, what's going on over here?
Who else was in these yeshivas?
Excuse me?
Who else was in these yeshivas?
So we don't know. It was probably people who, well, first we'll talk about, like, what they were trying to do, and then we'll try to figure out who was there, Right? The last time that Rashi talks about it, in other words, by Avram Yitzchak, he doesn't talk about it. Rabbi Yaakov, when he used to speak about this, he was sort of meramez why, by Avram Yitzchak, they didn't have to be at Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever, but Yaakov had to be already. He says the same thing you see by Yosef, in Parshas Vayeshev, it says that ki ben skunimu, right? So Rashi says, right, that he brings the Targum Unkelus, the Bar Chakim, he was ben skunim, can be in Zeshekona Chochma, right? A Zokin is Zeshekona Chochma. So he says that he gave over all the Torah of Shem Ve'Ever to Yosef. That's what it says. He gave all the Torah of Shem Ve'Ever. So Rabbi Yaakov says, like, yeah, what's going on over here? That Yaakov has his Torah and he has to sit and study it for 40 years and now he gives it over to Yosef. He doesn't give it over to the other brothers. So Rabbi Yaakov says a very interesting idea. He says that if you want to look at what Shem and Aver taught, you have to look at when they lived. Shem lived in Dor HaMabul and Aver lived in Dor HaFloga. So he says those were the two yeshivas. The yeshiva of Shem dealt with, you know, people who were degenerate people, whether it was in the environment of marriage, and you know, people breaking all the rules and all the gedarim of interpersonal relationships, whether it's money or sexual relationships, intimacy, right? They were breaking all the rules, right? So that's Benom Lachavera. Dor HaFloga was the opposite. Benom Lachavera, it says, they were all Uchad, they were one, right? But the problem was, philosophically, they were against God. They said, look, what do I need God for? We have a nice earth over here. We have nice company, and we have a nice world here. So what do you need God for, right? So he says, that's why there were two yeshivas. There was a yeshiva that Shem developed after the Dor HaMabul, or maybe even before the Dor HaMabul. And Rabbi Yaakov added something very interesting. He added Baal Peh. He said that Shem and Aver saw that they can't really fight and change the world. Like by Noah. He couldn't really fight and change the world. The world was set in its way, right? But they felt that if somebody wants to change, they can help him change, right? So instead of sort of isolating themselves, they insulated themselves, right? They insulated themselves from what was going on outside in the world. Rabbi Yaakov says the Avos were completely different. The Avos were, they lived in their world, right? And when Yishmael came into the world, and Sarah saw that he's affecting Yishmael, she said, throw him out of the house. So they lived in an environment that was very guarded, he says. And therefore, they didn't need, Avram Yitzchak didn't need the Torah of Shem Ve'Ever because they lived in this guarded environment, and people came to them, you know, people came to that, to Avram Avinu, to learn what he was, his ideologies and stuff like this. And it says that he actually spread the ideology, but he was a roe tzon. Roe tzon derech klal. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in a number of places that the roe tzon, I think in Sefer Shmos, he writes a big piece about it. The roe tzon were roe tzon, like he says David, and he actually mentioned Shmuel also, I think, which they don't know exactly what the makar is, but. But Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, yeah, what?
Moshe Rabbeinu,
excellent. So that's, I think, where he writes it. I think over there was where he writes Rabbeinu Bechaya. He says, because you didn't have to deal with the tzibur. He says, you could be separated from what was going on in the surroundings because Aroi Tzom were Acharei Amidbar, because it was, you know, you didn't want to do any gneva on people's lands. So people were always isolated. So the others were isolated. And in that isolationist group, they spread their Torah to people. Avraham Avinu spoke to people and stuff like this, but they lived a more isolated life, and that's why when Yishmael came around, Avraham Avinu was told that, you know, you can't have Yishmael over here because it's going to affect Yitzchak. By Yaakov already, it seems that Esav could not be thrown out of the house. You know, Rav Huttner, Zichron Lebracha, my Rebbe, Rav Huttner in Chaim Berlin, used to say in Yiddish, Avram Avinu is given the Eshte Gevoriner. And Yitzchak is given the Eshte Gevoriner. And Yaakov is given the Eshte Fafaliner. You know, the firstborn, that Avram was the first one who became a Yorei Shemayim, Gevorin. And then Yitzchak is Gevorin. He was born already into, so to speak, the Jewish family. And Yaakov, right, is the Ershef HaFalon. You can't leave Judaism, right? By Yaakov, he couldn't leave. So Esav was called the Yisrael Mummer, Rav Huttner said. By Yishmael, you could throw him out. But by Esav already, you can't throw out a Jewish child. I mean, I know, unfortunately, some families, when a kid goes a little bit off, they throw him out of the house, but it's not a healthy thing to do. Very unhealthy thing to do. So you have to keep him in the house. So that's why it could be, I thought this, that maybe by Yaakov, because it's really a little bit of a kasha. Like, why is Yaakov learning in the Yosheva Olim? Okay, I understand when he's going to Lavan, he has to sit and he has to do a doctorate on how to deal with Lavan. 14 years, that's two doctorates, it's not one doctorate, right? But when he was growing up in the house, right, it says, Eishav ish tzayid, sadeish yodei tzayid, Yaakov, Yosheva Olim, right? What does he need? What does he need to go to learn by Shem Vehaver now? The answer is that he had to live with Esav. So he had the problem in the house. And he couldn't get rid of that. He couldn't get rid of Esav as opposed to Yishmael. So that's why Rashi begins with Shem Vehaver begins with Yaakov. Even though there are midrashim that say Avram Avinu learned the base of Shem Vehaver, Yitzchak Avinu learned the base of Shem Vehaver. The Gemara just says Zokim V'Yoshev B'Yeshiva, but it doesn't say exactly where. But there are midrashim that talk about it. But Rashi never mentions it. He starts with Yaakov, and he goes on to Yosef, and that's the end, right? And yes, so question.
It means they must have been very old, Shem Vehaver.
Oh, my gosh.
Older than the others.
Oh, yeah. They lived, I don't know how many years. I don't remember now offhand, but hundreds of years they lived. But I think Aver died about 15 or 20 years after Shem. So that's why at the end, right, when Yaakov, he's learning only by Aver, because 2 years after he, if I'm not mistaken, Chazal say, the Gemara, I think it's the Gemara in Megillah, says that 2 years after he came to Lavan, Aver already passed away. So I think Shem died about 15 years before that. So Aver was, Shem was not around. Am I correct?
Yaakov was 50.
What?
Yaakov was 50. Shem was
50. When Yaakov was 50? Oh, yes? So he was already Nifter. Right, and therefore, of course, obviously it says Aver over there, and not Shem, right? But it could very well be, it's not beyond the thought that when Shem passed away, so Aver took over his ideology too. He taught both. He had to teach Shem's ideas and he taught Aver's ideas, right? But again, they were dealing with ideas with, whether it's with Olam HaChaver or Olam HaMakom, right? How to live in a society, right? How does live in a society in a proper way? Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah, you know, there was Derech Eretz in those days, and that was missing in Sdom, it was missing in Dor HaMabul. So Shem took that over, and that's what Rabbi Yaakov says. He says, when you look at when they lived, that's what you really see over here, which is interesting, by the way, because Rabbi Yaakov took for a Dovah Pashit that, so to speak, quote-unquote, the Rosh Yeshiva would deal with the environment, right? Shem and Aver dealt with their environment. They had to build a Torah against the environment. What was the cultural environment? Which, by the way, the Rambam in Ilchus Deis talks about this. The Rambam says that we're very mushpa from what's around us, our families, our friends, our societies. The Rambam even says that if you can't deal with your society, you have to leave the society. It brings a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, right? The Rambam has a whole shtickle Torah in Hilchas Deis about, you know, how affected we are by our society, right? So, of course, that was Shem Vehaver. They made sure that people would be able to guard themselves, right? Build a vest, a you know, a bulletproof vest around them, in a spiritual way and in a philosophical way, that they would be able to be guarded, right? Where Rabbi Yaakov says the Avos had their place where they said, whether it was Be'er Sheva, whether it was Chevron, they were there, and they were more isolated than insulated. That's what he said. But I say it's interesting that Rabbi Yaakov felt that we could determine what yeshivas they had by how they responded to their environment, which is interesting because I don't know if yeshivas today deal with such a thing. Do they yeshivas today respond to the environment? A lot of times you don't really find that. By the way, Rabbi Yaakov says the same thing. He says like this. He says, Rabbi Yaakov had raised the question, and I mentioned this, that why is it that for the 14 years, Yaakov is not held accountable? Right? He's not held accountable. But for the 22 years, 22 more years, he is held accountable for not coming home to his parents, and therefore, Midah Keneged Midah, he had to have Yosef gone for 22 years. That's what Chazal said. So Rabbi Yaakov said, because he says normally, Kibbutz Ava'im takes over the mitzvah Talmud Torah, right? Because the whole reason we learn Torah, I mean, the Rishonim already say this, right? The whole reason we learn Torah is to keep mitzvot, to know how to do mitzvot. So Torah can never pata you like I'm sitting and learning Daf Yomi. I can't say, well, today I don't have to put on tefillin because I'm learning Daf Yomi now, right? Torah is Almanas Lassos. You know, that's the whole reason why we're learning Almanas Lassos. So you have to do it. So he says, so what is Yaakov? He has a mitzvah of Kibbutz Ava'im to cut, you know, to make sure he's getting going there. It's not so clear exactly. His mother said, go there till Esav calms down. But then she tells Yitzchak, you know, I'm sending Yaakov there in order to make sure I don't want the Bnos Kanani. I want him to marry, right? So it's interesting how, like, she with Yitzchak, she plays one game. With him, she plays a different game, right? But let's even say he went for that amount of time to you know, he finished 14 years. Maybe he should have come home afterwards. You know, he finished, you know, for Rachel Leah. What?
It was preparation to go to Lebanon.
Oh, exactly. In other words, he said it's not domed to a person whose father sends him to get a coffee. Coffee. He says, go get me a coffee. So he goes, instead of going to the store, he goes to the Beis Marish and sits and learns for 3 hours. Then he gets his father a coffee. Right? He says, that's not Kibbutz Ava'im. You have to go right away. But he said, if the father says, get me a lulav and esrog, and he doesn't know the laws of, he doesn't know the halachas of lulav and esrog, so the first thing he has to do is go to the Beis Marish and learn about the laws of lulav and esrog. It's not a problem in Kibbutz Ava'im. He's wants to be Mekayim, keep it in properly, because I'm going to get my father a puzzle Ezra. You know, I can't do that. So I have to learn. So he says, that's what Yaakov was doing. It was a chelik of the Kibbutz Ava'im to be able to go there and deal with Lavan. He had to sit there for 14 years in the Beis Medrash of Ava. That's the way Rabbi Yaakov understood what was going on. And he says, Yosef, right, when it comes to Yosef already, he says, Yaakov knew that Yosef. Now, this is a question, how Yaakov knew that. Did Yaakov really know that Yosef is going to be the Ish HaGolos? Yaakov, we know, is the Ish HaGolos. Every time he tries to come back to Eretz Yisrael, he either can't stay, he has to leave. We know that Yaakov, of all the children, you know, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, all the others, he's definitely the Ish HaGolos, because he's always finding himself in Golos. You know, he gets back, brother, you know, Bikish Yaakov, Leshe Vashalva, Kavtzalov, you know, he has to go back to Mitzrayim, right? But Yosef, how did he know exactly that Yosef was going to be the one to go down to Egypt? So it's not clear. If Yaakov didn't speak about it, that, you know, how did he know? It seems like he had such a feeling, because it's that Rashi does mention after the brothers come back and say Yosef was killed, that he was ma'aneh to be mekabel tanchumim. Rashi says he didn't want to be mekabel tanchumim on Yosef, and Rashi says, a person is not makabel tanchuma amashu chai. A person that's alive still. So Yaakov had a certain, like, feeling, it seems, that Yosef was still alive. He was like, he was vacillating about it. He was in both worlds. He was like saying, yeah, it looks like he died. I see the blood and this and that. But on the other hand, I have feeling it. Because could be Yaakov felt that Yosef is not supposed to be the person that's killed. He's supposed to be in Mitzrayim. And that's why he gave him over all the Torah of Shem Ve'eva, because in Mitzrayim was not just Yosef had probably at least as hard a time as Yaakov dealing with the whole Egypt alone, not just with a family and people around him, like in a small town called Haran, right, at the area called Haran. This was Mitzrayim. This was like the capital. This was they were the world of that time. They were the influence on, you know, Western valleys. It wasn't Western valleys, but the Egyptian valleys or the world valleys of that time was Mitzrayim. No question about it. And Yosef had to survive. We see that Zeloya Pashut. It wasn't so simple that he would survive, right? So Rabbi Yaakov says that Yosef had to be given that, and the other brothers didn't. But the other brothers, he says, were choshesh that maybe Yosef is going to be the one to be the next Av, and they're going to all be cut out because he's giving him over all the Torah of Shem Ve'Ever. And one thing we did know is that we're going to be Gerim Eretz Lo Shelanu. That was given by Bris Brei Nabsarim. Avram was given that we're going to be in a land that didn't belong to us, right? That's Mitzrayim. So they see that Yosef is being given over the Torah of Shem Ve'Ever, whereas the brothers were given over the Torah of Yaakov. Right, but not Shem Ve'Ever. So they've started thinking, yeah, maybe we're actually not going to be. Yosef keeps thinking he's like the only show in town, and we're going to be cut out of the Bris Brei Nabsarim. So of course they felt that he was probably a Rodef, you know, that he's cutting out the 11 tribes. So of course they did what they did. Again, I'm not trying to say that it was 100% kosher, right? But that's what they were thought. You know, Avram, but Yaakov gave him over because he didn't want to cut out the brothers, obviously, the other children. He just wanted to give him over something extra so he would be able to survive in that environment. And he was taka right. Yosef was in that environment and he, you know, he had to survive. By the way, Rabbi Yaakov in a different place wants to say, I heard Rabbi Yaakov say this in a drush on a Friday night drush in Muncie. He was learning the Parsha Shavua. The Friday nights like now are very long, so he gave a shiur every Friday night in the winter on the Parsha. So the first year he used to give on Rishon Tisheni, the second year Sheni Tishlishi. That's the way he worked. Every seven, he didn't repeat himself, because each year he gave on a different part of the Parsha. Right? Then 7 years later, of course, then he started repeating again. But 7 years he didn't have to repeat. So he said that the question of why Yosef, right? Why didn't he write home? I mean, like when he was in Evan, he couldn't write home. You know, maybe, you know, couldn't buy the stamps to send the letter, right? But once you're, you know, Mishnah Lamelech, Mitzrayim, he didn't write home. He didn't write home. So Rabbi Yaakov said that the Ramban already asks the question. The Ramban talks about it because he wanted that he wanted the nevuahs to come true, that the brothers would come. So Rabbi Yaakov said, you know, he said a ha'ora on the Ramban. He said that that he doesn't know if the Ramban that he can agree with the Ramban. Why? He says, wait a minute, I'm not mechuyev to see my nevuahs come true. I'm mechuyev to keep the Torah and mitzvahs. If God wants the nevuahs to come true, that's God's problem. But Yosef has a kibud avim, and he has to write to his father. He wants to know he's helping God. He's God's accountant. God doesn't need accountants. He'll make sure that it'll come true. Don't worry. But you have to do what you have to do. You can't keep accounting for God. You can't, like, you know, protect God, so to speak. He doesn't need your protection. Right? We need his protection. He doesn't need our protection. So Rabbi Yaakov said an interesting idea. He said, and I remember the way he said it. He said, if someone would write, that time it was still before the Iron Curtain fell in Russia, if someone write to his father, you know, I've been gone for many years, but I want you to know I'm today the president of Russia, of the Soviet Union, right? So Yaakov would have sat shiv again on him. Right? He said he would have sat shiv on again. So Yosef had to first prove that I need Yosef, that I didn't change. He didn't want his father yet to know that he's there until the brothers could say who he is. And that's why it took all this time. That's the way Rabbi Yaakov approached it. That Yosef already was able to overcome because he had the Torah of Shem Ve'Ever. He was able to overcome, right? But it's not such a pashut thing to be able to overcome such a thing. 22 years, you know, he was in Egypt. It's a long time, right? So that's what Rabbi Yaakov was saying. This was Rabbi Yaakov's approach. It's very interesting because, I say again, it's interesting because it seems like the way Rabbi Yaakov's approaching it is that maybe it should be that yeshivas should deal with what's going on in society. Sometimes we don't want to deal with it because I don't want to put anything in your head. So let me not deal with it, and, you know, we'll keep you isolated over here in the Beis Medrash, right? You know, Pogaba Menuvel Zed, the Gemara says. So, Moshkeil Beit HaMedrash, you have to put him into the Beis Medrash, you know. You don't go out there to fight him. Bring him in here where you have the, you know, the capacity, right? Let him come in here. Don't go out there and fight him. But sometimes, you know, eventually, you know, a lot of people have to go into the world. There are Rosh Hashivas and Rabbonim that don't have to go into the world so much, right? But a person goes into the working world, he needs a little bit of an insulation. He can't just be thrown in, you know, after the yeshivas were ignoring, so to speak, and maybe they had good reason. They said, why should I put things in their head, you know, to deal with, and our society today, I don't have to tell you, you know, the Western values today are just completely upside down. It's very similar to what we have today in the Dor HaMavo. Very, unfortunately, very, very similar. So yeshivas don't want to deal with that. I mean, why am I going to put that into his head, you know? The power of suggestion is also a problem, right? But from Rabbi Yaakov, it would seem. I want to tell you, I want to mention a story to you that I heard from Rabbi Yaakov. It's very, very bothersome and interesting at the same time. In 1972, there were, you know, like Bachrim learning in Eretz Yisrael under Rabbi Nochum Partzovitz in the Mir Yeshiva, Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz, Zechon Levracha. They, you know, big Rosh Hashivas of the Mir. The first Rosh Hashivas was Chaim Shmulevitz, from Nochum Partzovitz, Nochum Trucker, he was known as. And two guys took a vacation, two American guys, during Bein Hazmanim, okay? And, excuse me, it was not 1972, it was 1974, okay? Either 74 or 75, I don't remember, but 74 or 75. So, what happened was, these two guys were doing like a tiyul in the north, and it was getting late, and they wanted to stay in a hotel overnight. Okay? And they decided that, you know, to walk around the whole fence of the hotel was long, so they decided it wasn't a hard fence, so they started climbing over the fence. And a guard came out and killed one. He wanted to kill the other one too, but he killed one. And, I mean, then he came close. He saw there were two yeshiva guys. They were two Jews. He thought they were Arabs. It was after, you know, it was after the 73 war, right? And it was the north, right? So he was worried. So, of course, it was night. Someone's trying to climb over a fence. So he shot them. So one of them, or both of them actually were Rosh Hashiva's sons. I'm not going to mention the names now, but they were both Rosh Hashiva's in America, their sons. And one of them was killed. And I went to Rabbi Yaakov. And I was speaking to Rabbi Yaakov about something else, and I mentioned to him that one of the Rosh Hashivas of this yeshiva, his son, and he knew about it. He knew that his son was killed. And Rabbi Yaakov said to me like this, how could yeshiva guys be so removed from reality that they don't realize that Israel is always at war? You can't make an assumption because there's no war that we're not at war. Israel's always at war. That's what Rabbi Yaakov said. He says, it's a pella to me how they could ignore the fact that Israel's always at war. We all have enemies on every side, right? And they could climb over a fence. He says, I'm sure that they didn't even think about it, you know, because they were so removed from what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't. You know, I remember when I went to Eretz Yisrael, so Rabbi Yaakov said, did you buy a radio? I was taken aback by it. He said, did you buy a radio? So I said, no, I didn't buy a radio. He says, in America, you could live without a radio. But there, it's really, you have to have a radio because there's always could be a war. That's what he said to me. I bought a transistor radio. Actually, I just want to tell you something interesting. I had this transistor radio. You know what transistor means, like, you know, with a battery, you know. Today, a lot of people don't need radios because they have phones and stuff. But it's still the old-fashioned, like a radio, a small radio with a battery it comes. And, you know, you can get the news stations on the radio. So I bought that. I bought it approximately 46, 47 years ago. And I have a son-in-law, very firm guy that was called up for Miluim. And, you know, he doesn't have a smartphone. He has just a regular cell phone. So he says, I want to listen to the news while I'm in the army. Do you have a radio? So I found the radio. I said, you just have to put a battery in and it'll work. I gave him the radio, right? I don't know. I'm wondering, in the army, I'm sure you're up on everything. They up everything every moment, but he wanted a radio. But I saw that Rav Yaakov was thinking that you have to have a radio in Eretz Yisrael. Because, by the way, it came in handy, because in the 1990 war, right, with Iraq, so I always had the radio on. You know, they even had, in Israel, a silent station where it would only come on if you had to run into the safe room, right? So I had it on Shabbos, and if there was an alarm, so the radio started, you know, giving the alarm, so you would hear it, and it would say how long you should be in the safe room, and, you know, whatever it is, right? But that's where Yaakov felt you can't. That always reminded me of the idea of Shem Ve'Eiver, that, you know, you have to live in the world. The yeshivas have to supply both things. They have to supply the isolationist that you hear, have you Gola L'makom Torah, you know, to be a Gola L'makom Torah. But on the other hand, we have to prepare the guys as well for going out in the world. And sometimes that gets a little bit, you know, oversight. There's an oversight about it, and people don't really think about it. But it seems from Rabbi Yaakov that that's what Shem Ve'Eiver really were. Thank you very much.